Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So it's been about 2 weeks since the last class, almost 2 weeks, 12 days actually. So we had completed 4 chapters in reading and 3 chapters in questions. So we'll continue with the 4th chapter of Nectar of Devotion. See, we have some guests.
Yeah, there are from Ottawa, there are visiting, there are devotees.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know English, right?
No comprende inglese?
No.
You want to translate them simultaneously?
It doesn't distract you. It's up to you if you want. It's up if you think
yes.
It's okay. But if you do it too loud, it'll distract me. So not too loud.
Okay.
So everyone is up to the section. We're on chapter 4. We gave some questions for chapter 4 last time. So today we'll discuss chapter 4, and then we'll read chapter number 5. Chapter 4 is a very easy chapter to discuss because the topic is just basically practically one theme that runs through the whole chapter. The chapter is entitled Devotional Service Surpasses All Liberation. Questions, and these are some verses that referred to this particular chapter. So, I hope not. Did everyone do the questions? Yeah? You did the questions? Gonzalo, you also?
Yes.
You did the questions? Eliana? You answered all but 2. You answered 4 questions. Yeah, okay. All right. So, the main point of this, before we get into the question, what is the main point in this particular chapter, Eliana?
I'm sorry?
What is the main point in this chapter?
How devotional service is
you started off all right. You didn't finish, Doctor. How devotional service is superior to liberation or to
material
offense? How devotional service is superior to liberation and to any material opulence or any material situation or any material situation. So these are the main points. Now, what are some of the examples that are used in this chapter to illustrate this point?
Primarily verses from the Bhagavatam.
Huh?
Verses from the Bhagavatam.
Okay, what is one of the key ones that really illustrates this point? The Atmarama verse. And what is the essential principle of the Atmarama verse, Gonzalo?
I don't have my name Bart exactly. I was reading there.
What is an
Atmarama? Okay.
What is an Atmarama?
It's self-satisfied.
Someone who is self-satisfied.
Self-satisfied.
And self-satisfied by dint of what?
By long service to the Supreme Lord.
No. Well, an Atmarama is someone who is self-satisfied by what? Dint of? What is that thing that's giving him self-satisfaction? It's not loving service to the Lord. Something else.
They say just to be imbued within the self.
But what is the characteristics of that?
He doesn't have any material disturbances.
No material disturbances, but what makes him satisfied?
He's not got.
Yeah, he's satisfied in the self because he has one thing that's very prominent.
Knowledge of the self?
Yeah, he's transcendental knowledge. He has transcendental knowledge. He doesn't have devotional service, but he's situated in the knowledge of the self. That the self is actually what? What is the quality of the self? The self has what? What are you? Are you this body? No, what are you? Okay, so what is... So you're satisfied in the sense that you have knowledge of your position as spirit soul. That you have nothing to do with... It's all... You have nothing to do with what? With this matter, right. You're in it, but you have nothing to do with it. And one is fixed in that knowledge, and one is satisfied within yourself by that transcendental knowledge. So that's the quality of an Atmaram. But still, what happens when an Atmaram comes in contact with what we say pure devotional service?
It's so attractive then.
He's attracted. In other words, devotional service is so powerful that even though one is fixed in transcendental knowledge and satisfied, it attracts one to engage in devotional service. Now, why is that? Because there's a higher taste. There's a sweetness that comes from devotional service that cannot be found in what we self, in knowledge of the self. That's one verse. What's another verse? One by Lord Shiva. Who knows the verse by Lord Shiva?
Sanskrit.
Sixth canto, seventh chapter, verse 28.
6:17.
17.
What is this? What's the Sanskrit?
It doesn't mention any of that.
Well, there's 4 points in that verse then. What are the 4 points? I did my homework. Now you guys are supposed to do yours.
First sentence, sir. Do you want me to read the verse?
Yeah.
First sentence, my dear Sati, persons who are devoted to Narayan, Krishna, are not afraid of anything. If they're elevated to the higher planetary systems, or if they get liberation from material contamination, or if they're pushed down to the hellish condition of life, or, in fact, in any situation whatever, they are not afraid of anything. Simply because they have taken shelter at the lotus feet of Narayan, for them, any position in the material world is as good as another.
So analyze that verse. What are 4 main points that are mentioned here?
They are liberated. They say go to a higher planetary system. If they're pushed down to a hellish planetary system or any other situation they're in.
That's all one point.
That's one point.
One point that they're not affected by any material situation. All material situations are
beneficial.
That's one way, yeah. Beneficial is good, but all material situations are. But.
As good as another.
Yeah, they're all as good as the other. Anyone is the same as the other one. Why? Because they are. Because they are. What are they doing?
Engaged in devotional service.
Engaged in devotional service. Therefore, they are never afraid, and their only interest is. devotional service. So engage in devotional service, there's no fear, all the situations are the same, and they're only interested in the service. 4 points. Okay? You got it? To engage in devotional service, and they're not interested in anything else, and they're not fearful, and every situation is the same. Spoken by Lord Shiva to Mother Parvati in relationship to Chitraketu, who was cursed by Parvati to go to hell. And he accepted that situation as his life and soul. Shiva, when Shiva saw that quality, he realized this is the devotion of Narayana, Para, Sarve, Nakushchasjana, Akutasjana, Vidyati, Swarga, Pavarga, Narekshu, Apitu, Yarka, Darshanaha.
Did you say the last one of those 4 points one time?
Yeah. Devotee is solely engaged in devotional service,
right.
Never fearing any situation.
Right.
All situations are the same to them, and they're only interested in devotional service. That's the points in the order, as mentioned in the verse. So, what is another quality of a person who has found attraction in devotional service? What are they interested in? Iliana. And they're engaged in devotional service. Now, what is it that about devotional service that attracts them? Prasadam? That's correct, but it's not mentioned. What is it that attracts them? You don't know. Why don't you know? You're supposed to know. You didn't do your homework. It's something that they take pleasure in. What do they take pleasure in? What do devotees take pleasure in?
Hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord.
That's it. Hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. This is their pleasure. And they see all material opulences as one. What do they see all material opulences as? When you see something material opulence, what do you think?
It's mundane.
Oh, okay, that's one line. You see it as mundane. When you see a material opulence, what do you think?
Temporary.
He says temporary, it's mundane. What do you see?
Something rewarded by the Supreme Lord and therefore should be offered to the Supreme Lord.
There you go. That's the one. Something that can be used, that is meant for the service of the Lord. That's the vision of a devotee. He sees, he doesn't reject things, but he sees the things that these are owned by the Lord and they're meant for the service of the Lord. What does a materialist see when he sees a material happiness? What does he see?
My enjoyment.
Something for my enjoyment. And a tapasi, what does he see it? He sees it, as you mentioned it, just temporary or miserable. Okay. All devotees, what is mentioned in this chapter, that the devotees aspire for what? What do they aspire for when they engage in devotional service? What do they want? Some of the things, maybe there's many things that the devotee wants in devotional service. When he's engaged in devotional service, what is he looking for?
To be always serving the Lord.
That's nice, yeah, but that's what we're saying. When he's always serving the Lord, what is he looking for in that? What is he trying to do?
Please
Yeah, he's trying to please the Lord. He's always engaged in the Lord's service, trying to please the Lord or please the Lord's devotees. So he's doing it, not only just doing it, but he's doing it with the desire to please the Lord. That is devotional service. And one other thing that he is aspiring for, the dust of the Lord's feet, the dust of the Lord's lotus feet. And what does the dust of the Lord's lotus feet represent? Is
mercy.
Very good. Yeah. Write that down. This, the dust of the Lord's lotus feet represents his mercy. There was something mentioned in that verse that refers to one prayer that we sing during the year. What is the name of that prayer? The Amidah prayer. What's that line that we sing? Who knows the translation of that line? Yeah. The line that refers to this one.
Speaking of Kuvera,
no, the one is one. My dear Lord, I do not aspire for liberation, nor do I aspire for elevation to heavenly planets. I only aspire for love. No, it doesn't say that. What do I want? I only want the childhood pastimes that appear in my mind. Again, that's another aspect of devotional service. And what is it about devotional service that I want to see how I phrase this question here. Name some examples based on that chapter and talk about personalities who illustrate this particular quality. There's a bunch of examples given. Eliana? Who was mentioned in the chapter? There's at least four or five different persons that were mentioned in this chapter, or more actually, who are on this platform. They only want devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj, very good. Prahlad Maharaj, and what was the situation? Can you describe it? According to the pastime.
Lord
Shinhani
wanted to give him a
benediction,
I think.
Yeah, you got it. And what happened? What did Prahlad say?
He rejected it.
Why? He said, I don't worship you for anything material. I simply worship you because you're you. I'm not a merchant. Like that. But the Lord still wanted to offer him benediction, so he gave him another choice. Finally, Prahlad said, if you want to give me a choice, if you want to give me a benediction, then what did he finally ask for?
To give his father liberation?
Yeah, and then he said that. And then the Lord said, that's already done. Now ask for something else. What else did he say? He already liberated his father simply by touching him, killing him.
He said, I don't want anything which diminishes my relationship with you.
Right. This is not in the chapter, so you're not going to find it yet. The access to the Lord Maharaj said, just let me remain in this material world and preach, that's all. Preach to the rascals like us. Okay. He said, if you want to give me a benediction, then let me just be your instrument to help others, basically. That's all he asked. And this is the essence of Krishna consciousness. A devotee doesn't want anything for themselves. They only want either to please the Lord, serve the Lord, or they want to help others engage in devotional service. So we're not on that platform. We may not be. We might still think kind of this, kind of that. But sooner or later, you understand through your own experience that devotional service is self-satisfying. I want an interesting point I wanted to add to this, to show you the Lord, how what the Lord thinks of one who pleases Him. But I don't know if we have. Do we have access to a Bhagavatam? Do we have a Bhagavatam? Can we get
chapter
9 of Canto 7, and verses 52 through 54.
Oh,
but this is Lord Nisringadeva's response. This is interesting. I want to bring this up because I think it'll help you understand. When we speak about pure devotional service, when we speak about devotional service, we see that how the Lord responds to this mood of selfless service. What is his reciprocation with his devotees? Many times we don't trust the Lord, or we don't really understand the Lord. But the Lord makes Himself understood by His words. Yes. Who's another example in this particular chapter?
Prithu
Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj also. Read those three verses.
Which verse? 52,
3, and 4. Thank you.
With the purports as well, or just
no, just the verse. Now, Prahlad Maharaj has just offered beautiful prayers to, and now after his prayers, he praises the Lord. Now the Lord is responding.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Prahlad."
No. Each one of these verses, the same thing is being said. Now note what that one point is. It's very important.
My dear Prahlad, most gentle one, best of the family of the Shuras, all good fortune unto you. I am very much pleased with you. It is my pastime to fulfill the desires of all living beings, and therefore you may ask from me any benediction that you desire to be fulfilled. My dear Prahlad, may you live a long time. One cannot appreciate or understand me without pleasing me, but one who has seen or pleased me has nothing more for which to lament for his own satisfaction. My dear Prahlad, you are very fortunate. Please know from me that those who are very wise and highly elevated try to please me in all different modes and mellows, for I am the only person who can fulfill all the desires of everyone.
Now, one point, there's two points that are mentioned in each of the three verses, but there's one point that illustrates what we're saying here. That's the one point. What's the other one? That's the other one I'm looking for. That the Lord fulfills the desires, there's nothing one should aspire for, and then this is pastimes. In other words, Krishna always takes care of his devotees. In fact, he said, I enjoy that, it's my pastime. No one who pleases me has nothing to worry about. One who pleases me has nothing to aspire for, because it's already taken care of by me. So the key again is that we're speaking in this chapter that pure devotional service surpasses everything. Why? Because directly the Lord benedicts his devotee with everything. This is why devotional service is so satisfying. It's so satisfying. There's nothing there. Nothing left out. Okay? Who are some of the other examples in this chapter? Personalities, Preeti Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj. Who else?
Gajendra
the elephant. Who else?
Ritasura.
He's speaking about the rarity of pure devotional service. Who else?
Vishnu. Narayana. Speaking to Durvasa.
Did I mention Durvasa in this chapter?
Well, Vishnu, Lord Vishnu is speaking to Durvasa about his, about the greatness of his glory.
Oh.
He's saying that they don't even aspire for the process of liberation.
Right. Okay. That's good. So Hanuman, also he's mentioned.
The
Nagapatni.
Huh?
Nagapatni.
The
Nagapatnis. Kali. Yeah. But they're offering nice prayers. Okay, just mention a few personalities and so. Queen Kunti. What is it about Queen Kunti that is her qualification? Yes, very good. Queen Kunti's qualification was, she said, I'm not like everyone else, they're also highly qualified. I'm just like a, what does she call herself?
I'm just a woman.
I'm just an ordinary woman. But because she was humble, the Lord considered her qualification of being the greatest. Was her humility attracted to the Lord? And the chapter ends with, what's the relationship between Vaikuntha and Goloka? What does Prabhupada say about that?
In Vaikuntha, there may still be some desire to have a little sort of optimism as the Supreme Lord. Whereas in Goloka Vrindavan, they don't even consider that due to their exhausted love, they just consider it as a place of Krishna.
Yeah, Prabhupada says that Lord Krishna's devotees are, what's the word he uses?
Foremost.
Or topmost, even. Topmost. There's devotees of Narayana and devotees of Vishnu, but still, devotees of Krishna are the best.
Yay.
Okay. Little spiritual chauvinism. Okay, so yes, that's the essence of the chapter. Now we'll just go through the questions that we didn't answer by discussion. Let's see if we left anything. Yes.
Oh, we're going to answer the question now.
Well, except for the ones that we did answer in this discussion.
Regarding the question number part, why aren't the devotees interested in the relation to the Vaikuntha planets? Although it is association to Krishna.
Okay.
The answer of this question is the Prabhupada mentioned that they are, according to every particular devotee, they have a different attraction for particular forms of the Lord. Also in Vaikuntha there are only four forms.
Yeah.
But maybe one devotee is interested in Lord Ramachandra association and Krishna in his form of two hands. But this is the answer to this question.
Why aren't the devotees interested in liberation to the Vaikuntha, although it gives association with Krishna? So what's the difference between the qualities of Vishnu and the qualities of Narayana? I mean, the qualities of Krishna and Krishna and Narayana.
Krishna has 64.
Oh yeah, but what is the distinction?
Majesty. Godliness.
Yeah, in Vaikuntha there is a reverence, mutual reverence. In Vrindavan,
yeah, but what is mentioned is those four qualities that are distinct.
What?
That Narayan doesn't have.
Ah, the wonderful pastimes.
Wonderful pastimes.
Flute.
And?
It's beauty.
Transcendental beauty and his devotees. He's surrounded by his. So, you know, there's certain qualities of the Krishna that.
What are those four qualities?
Let's mention also nectar devotion. The 64 qualities of Krishna.
No, I mean the four that Krishna has that aren't
it. Yeah. Okay, he's surrounded by loving devotees, plays on his transcendental flute, his beautiful bodily effulgence, his extraordinary pastimes. Pastimes, beauty, flute, and devotees. These are the four. The Vishnu has all the qualities of Krishna except these four. Okay. Let's see. Prove that devotional service is beyond liberation. We discussed that.
Yeah.
Briefly explain how it's everyone's duty to offer everything for the satisfaction of the Lord and prove that this will bring happiness and enjoyment to them. Who wants to answer that question? Okay.
From Brahmas down to the basic extent, knowing that this island for enjoying the material appearances. The simply meant for offering everything to the people of character, the personality of God, and by doing so, many automatically enjoy the benefits. For example, can be cited again for the different parts of the body collectively.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, continue.
And cooking them so that. Ultimately, a meal may be offered to the stomach. After it has gone to the stomach, all parts of the body, including the joints, then the remain. But similarly, everyone's food is satisfied with the meal, and then I'm not the only one to satisfy.
Yeah. Or because we're all. What's the final summation? Because we are all. He just read it.
Parts and parts.
They're all connected to Krishna, as the stomach is connected to the rest of the body. It connects the rest of the body by the energy source coming from food that goes into the stomach. Similarly, when Krishna is the center, and then everyone is connected to Krishna. So when Krishna is satisfied, everyone automatically becomes satisfied. Okay, I explain how the devotees, though giving up material enjoyment, still enjoy happiness. Jerry.
Those who are engaged in devotional service can automatically give up material life and also enjoy the transcendental bliss of hearing and chanting the wonderful activities of the Lord.
So the answer is hearing and chanting the Lord. We got number six. Oh, okay, that's the answers. So any questions that anyone wants to discuss? Any of those six questions?
I'm just saying that the impact families, they want liberation from the material distress. That is Srila Prabhupada, I listened in a lecture that this compared to when a person is going to sleep, he forgets all his material problems, but at one moment he wants to wake up. So, but the devotee is going beyond that. He gives up the material distress, but he wants to listen to the activities of the Lord. He is enjoying something higher, but the impersonalism only. It stops suffering.
Right.
But it doesn't get anything else.
Yeah. Is stopping enjoying suffering the happiness that one experiences in life? Simply to stop your suffering, is that happiness? No, stopping your suffering means just to be normal. Yeah, you're not meant to suffer, so if you somehow stop suffering, you're normal. But the ecstasy and happiness that comes with one's innate nature is only experienced through the process of contact with Krishna or devotional service. So it has to be something more. The impersonalists, you know, they're not experiencing distress, but they're not experiencing real happiness either. It's like a man, you know, who's sick, and then all of a sudden he gets cured. But at the same time, nothing's changed. But then if he goes out and starts doing something in his life, and finds happiness in that, then that's higher. Simply, the impersonalists are more or less stopping suffering, that's all. Through transcendental knowledge, through various types of austerities. But life means pleasure, and pleasure means activity. And activity, devotion, spiritual activity, is coming in contact with Krishna, which gives pleasure. Therefore, a devotee wouldn't trade, you know, anything for any situation if it's without devotional service. Even the best material situation seems to be, you know, like hell if there's no opportunity to serve. Whereas a hellish situation is nice even if one gets a chance to engage in devotional service. So it's the service that makes the difference. The gyanis don't. They don't perform service.
They're on an intermediate state. They're one step above the karmis, but still they're not on the level of the devotees.
This is important to understand. You understand what devotional service is. It's not just doing things. It's actually a certain consciousness that comes
with devotional service. With connecting with Krishna through that service. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam verses that refer to devotional service. That was just a reference. How many looked up those verses? Everybody? Yes?
Have
you looked up some of them? Next time. Okay, so chapter 4, any more final questions? Discussions? This is an interesting chapter. Yes. So the next chapter is chapter 5, it's called Purity of Devotional Service. Okay, we can start reading for today. Any questions from the previous lessons?
I have a question. As Prabhupada said that those who are in the fully liberated stages may still be going through different stages of existence. In the beginning, they may want the openness of Krishna. But at the mature stage, the dormant love for Krishna exhibited in Vrindavan becomes prominent in their hearts. So, the devotees who are liberated, they are still making advancements in Krishna consciousness. I understand from here that those who are more elevated, they go to Krishna in Vrindavan. But what happened with devotees like Hanuman? He's also pure devotee, but the king will never develop the mood of Vrindavan. Because he's attracted to Lord
Ramachandra. That's right. Prabhupada mentions in that although there are different kinds of devotees. But you see, there's an added sweetness in Krishna that's not in there in any other incarnation. Therefore, Krishna is the embodiment of all the qualities of the Supreme. Whereas Lord Vishnu, our Lord Narayan, which is incarnation of Ramachandra's incarnation of Lord Narayan, the devotee is completely satisfied in loving ecstasy to the Lord, but there's certain elements that are not there in that aspect of the Godhead. Such as those four we mentioned.
So because of that, the gopis are what we talk most about, even higher than the one Hanuman.
The love of the gopis is the highest. And only Krishna can, what we say, provoke that type of loving emotion. Maybe Ram can't do that. Or doesn't do it. He just doesn't do it. As long as you have to remember one thing, as long as there's the mood of awe and reverence is there, there's something less in that relationship. Because awe and reverence denotes a type of, you know, obedience. And in Narayan, I mean, in Krishna, there's no question of even obedience. It's just pure attraction.
Attraction is so strong that even one will sacrifice all of one's personal desires, even their spiritual desires, just to serve Krishna or just to be with Krishna. Yes.
Regarding with the relationship with the spiritual master, the relation disciple and master is always based on obedience.
Yeah.
There is some stage where you can go, the relationship can go further.
Well, this is debatable, because sometimes the spiritual masters. I've heard different things. But generally, the spiritual master is like a parent, he's the father. You know, actually the relationship between the spiritual master and the disciples is father to son or father to daughter. So there's a sense of obedience, there's a sense of serving the father in a certain way, following his instructions. But there's also, it mentions places that sometimes the spiritual master takes on the role of friend towards his devotee. But the problem is, the devotee should not, the disciple should not feel, should not take on that relationship with the spiritual master. Just like a father may become a friend to his son after some time and the son grows up, doesn't treat him anymore like a subordinate, treats him like an equal almost, like a friend. So in the same way, the spiritual master may also develop a very friendly attitude towards a devotee, but a disciple, but the disciple should not reciprocate that. Because if the disciple reciprocates in that way, then there is familiarity, and familiarity will start to erode the mood of following instructions. We'll take the instructions less serious. Okay. Tired. I'm still going. I keep going. Tiredness is just something that you just have to ignore. Ignore it and keep going. To answer your question?
Yes.
From one side, you know, friendship sometimes comes from the spiritual master down. But the other way, if the disciple starts to think in that same way, then he becomes fallen. He always keeps the mood of our rooms.
But he has a relationship with a disciple. Maybe Yashua, you know, there is a pattern when the devotee enters in the pattern of Radharani, and he brought from the river and passing from Radharani. And bring it to her. He was meditating in the pasture, and his disciple entered and helped him. It's in the book of the Satyavrata, the three Saint Vaishnavas.
Which one? Which the life of the Vaishnava saints?
Three Vaishnava saints.
The three. Vishamananda, Narottam Das, and Srinivas.
I think it's Srinivas. It's kind of pastime. And it's very...
What was the pastime again?
That this devotee was meditating in the pastime of Krishna. And he was meditating in a pastime that Radharani lost his iron. A person and an iron in the river. And so one gopi told to this devotee who was meditating to get this iron, but he couldn't. And then his disciple entered in the meditation.
And then it was.
And helped him.
Oh, yeah, that's really Bhattacharya.
Okay.
Yeah. That was from the Yeah. He went into Samadhi for about 3 days.
Yes. And after the pastime, they were embracing each other, so the relationship was very a friendship.
Yeah, it's a rare case. Yeah, but still, that even there's also the mood of friendship with all nervous. There is mood of friendship with all nervous. As soon as you lose the awe and reverence in the relationship with the guru, then the relationship starts to become mundane. You have to keep that mood of awe and reverence, otherwise it'll gravitate down to familiarity, and then familiarity starts bringing indifference, and indifference starts bringing, you know, seeing mistakes and faults, and after that, one starts to make differences. Okay. Any other questions? Chapter 5, we can read that. Everybody's still alive?
Barely.
Huh?
Barely.
You're all falling asleep because of me?
Oh, I'm not falling asleep. I'm just like,
huh?
I'm feeling a little bit sick today. So.
Really? Why?
I had a headache all day. I didn't have a joint.
You look good this morning, right?
Yeah, I was okay this morning, actually.
Okay, the purity of devotional service. Go ahead, Jerry, you want to start off? Read for at least 2 paragraphs or more.
All of the previous instructions imparted by Srila Rupa Goswami in his broad statements can be summarized thus. As long as one is materially inclined or desirous of merging into the spiritual effulgence, one cannot enter into the realm of pure devotional service. Next, Rupa Goswami states that devotional service is transcendental to all material considerations and that it is not limited to any particular country, class, society, or circumstance. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, devotional service is transcendental and has no cost. Devotional service is executed without any hope for gain, and it cannot be checked by any material circumstances. It is open for all, without any distinction, and it is the constitutional occupation of the living entities. In the Middle Ages, after the disappearance of Lord Chaitanya's great associate, Lord Nityananda, a class of priestly persons claimed to be the descendants of Lord Nityananda, calling themselves the Goswami caste. They further claim that the practice and spreading of devotional service belonged only to their particular class, which is known as Nityananda Vamsha. In this way, they exercised their artificial power for some time until Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the powerful acharya of the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya, completely smashed their idea. There was a great hard struggle for some time. but it has turned out successfully, and it is now correctly and practically established that devotional service is not restricted to a particular class of men. Besides that, anyone who is engaged in devotional service is already at the status of being a high-class Brahmin. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's struggle for this movement has come out successfully. Keep going.
Let's see, there's only three of us, four of us. Yeah, read one more paragraph.
It is on the basis of his position that anyone can now become a Gaudiya Vaishnava from any part of the world or any part of the universe.
What's that word again?
Gaudiya, I said it.
Yeah.
Gaudiya?
Gaudiya.
Gaudiya Vaishnava. From any part of the world or any part of the universe. Anyone who is a pure Vaishnava is situated transcendentally, and therefore the highest qualification in the material world, namely, to be in the mode of goodness, has already been achieved by such a person. Our Krishna consciousness movement in the Western world is based on the above-mentioned proposition of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami, Prabhupada, our spiritual master. On his authority, we are claiming members from all sections of the Western countries. The so-called Brahmins claim that one who is not born into a Brahmin family cannot receive the sacred thread and cannot become a high-grade Vaishnava. But we do not accept such a theory because it is not supported by Rupa Goswami nor by the strength of the various scriptures.
Good. Okay, it's pretty self-explanatory. Prabhupada saying there's no restrictions in allowing anyone to practice. Any part of the world. Okay. What's the Gaudiya Vaishnava as opposed to a Vaishnava?
We follow what Chaitanya Sankirtan goes
in. Yeah. Well, I guess I'm getting really interested there. What's the difference between a Gaudiya Vaishnava and a regular Vaishnava? What's the unique feature of Lord Chaitanya's worship?
He's giving love for the moon of Vrindavan.
Yeah.
The love of the gopis.
Yeah.
For Krishna.
Yeah. Radharani and the gopis. Who is Radharani there?
So the other sampradayas don't have that?
No, they worship Lord Narayana. All of them. Except for... Vimbarka sampradaya, they also worship. They're also Vrindavan.
Which one?
Vimbarka. That's the four Kumaras, chapter Shushana.
Now, do these other sampradayas like acknowledge or know? Do they? I mean, is it like we feel we're superior and they feel they're superior? Or do they understand they're worshiping Orion?
We don't say we're superior. Scripture says we're superior.
But do they interpret scripture in another way?
No, I mean, superior and inferior is not the question. When you're satisfied, you're satisfied. And each of the sampradayas can teach, what we see, pure devotional service to the Lord. And a lot of their pure devotees. And the qualities and characteristics are, completely self-satisfying. But there's this added element of sweetness in Krishna worship that is not there in the other ones. Prabhupada uses the example of different levels of sweetness. You may start off with molasses, a gore, and you come up to sugar candy, and then he says, higher than sugar candy is rock candy. Well, it's concentrated. It's just like, it's concentrated sweetness. So there's sweetness in more or less concentrated forms. So in Krishna, all the sweetness is concentrated. It's just a higher aspect of the soul's, It's just like there are fruits And all of them are nice, but there are certain fruits that are better. There are sweets that are all nice, but there are certain sweets that are just have a lot of extra pizzazz to them, you know. That's an extra little bit. So you can't tell Hanuman he should worship Krishna. He won't, because he's completely satisfied with Ram. You can't tell, you know, Dhruva to worship, you know, he's worshiping also Lord Vishnu. So each is getting their complete satisfaction in their Istadeva, in their particular form of worship. And all the forms are equal. But when you speak about differences, the differences are in the sweetness of the relationship. There's an added element of sweetness in Krishna worship. And that element is that those who worship Krishna in Vrindavan don't see Krishna as God. They don't see Krishna as God. They see Krishna as the most beautiful boy of Vrindavan, the all-attractive feature. They love Krishna because he's Krishna, not because he's God. But in Vaikuntha, everyone knows that that Narayana is God. He's the Supreme Lord. So there's a difference between the intimacy of love and the love imbued with awe and reverence. Just like, I'll give you an example. You go to work, you have a relationship with your boss, but there's no intimacy there. But again, when you come home, you have a relationship with the children, and there's a little bit different, but then you, with the relationship with the wife, there's more intimacy. So, in the sweetness of Krishna's relationship, the intimacy of love, you know, takes on higher and higher levels of intimacy and sweetness. Different flavors, that's all. Okay? But still, when you can't tell Arjuna, you know, to change, or you can't tell anyone who is in the Vaikuntha mood that they have to go to. They may aspire for Vrindavan. Some do. It says that in the previous chapter, someone may be elevated to Vrindavan and may aspire for Goloka. But not everyone. The majority are satisfied just the way they are worshiping. When you're satisfied, you're satisfied. That's all.
So similarly, in the material world, people have all these varieties of religion, and they're completely satisfied with their particular worship.
Yeah, that's fine.
But even though, like from an objective perspective, some of it seems clearly, how do you say, in a nice way, like, you know,
lesser.
That's a nice way of saying it.
Yeah, because what is it? It's the knowledge, it's the intimacy that's there. Mm-hmm. That's there. The knowledge of the Lord is greater in certain traditions. I mean, how much, when you go to work, how much do you know about the boss? Only based on that relationship with, you know, employer to employee. But the boss, he also has a private life, and his wife knows a lot about him. She has an intimacy of that. So yes, she has a deeper relationship with him. But you can't have that. So, on some traditions, only take you up to a certain level of relationship. But in that relationship, you may be satisfied. Sridhar Swami, he's the commentator of Srimad Bhagavatam, but he worships Lord Nisringadeva. And but in his love for Lord Nisringadeva, he's completely satisfied. Again, my different souls have different, what we say, swarups. Just like if you read the whole Brihad Bhagavatam, read this. I mean, everything becomes clear. Read the Brihad Bhagavatam. It's all clear. Al Gopu Kumara, he's in the Vrindavan mode. He's meeting the Lord on all levels. And he's attracted to the Lord. But there's something missing. There's something missing, that in each of the relationship the intimacy of love is not completely complete. He even goes to Vaikuntha and he sees Lord Narayan there and he wants to embrace him. And then Lord Narayan is also very pleased, but at the same time, the residents of Vaikuntha are not so happy to see somebody coming up and treating Lord Narayan like such an intimacy. But therefore, Gopal Kumar couldn't feel complete satisfaction with Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan told him, you have to go back to Vrindavan. That's where you belong, you're a cowherd boy. Follow? Intimacy of sweetness. Okay, let's continue. Srila Rupa Goswami, you want to read?
Yeah.
Okay, you can read.
Srila Rupa Goswami specifically mentions herein that every man has a birthright to accept devotional service and to become Krishna conscious. He has given many evidences from many scriptures, and he has especially quoted one passage from Padma Purana, wherein sage Vaishishta tells King Vidipa, "My dear king, everyone has the right to execute devotional service, just as he has the right to take early bath in the month of Magh, December, January." There is more evidence in Padma Purana and the Kashi Kanda portion, where it is said, "In the country known as Mayuradwaj, the lower caste people who are considered less than Shudras are also initiated in the Vaishnava cult of devotional service. And when they are properly dressed with tilak on their bodies and beads in their hands and on their necks, they appear to be coming from Vaikuntha. In fact, they look so very beautiful that immediately they surpass the ordinary Brahmins. Thus, a Vaishnava automatically becomes a Brahmin." This idea is also supported by Sanatana Goswami in his book, Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is the Vaishnava guide. There he has clearly stated that any person who is properly initiated into the Vaishnava cult certainly becomes a Brahmin, as much as the metal known as Kamsa, bell metal, is turned into gold by the mixture of mercury. A bona fide spiritual master, under the guidance of authorities, can turn anyone to a Vaishnava cult, so that naturally you may come to the topmost position of a Brahmin. Srila Rupa Goswami warns, however, that if a person is properly initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, he should not think that simply by the acceptance of such initiation his business is then finished. One still has to follow the rules and regulations very carefully. If after accepting a spiritual master and being initiated, one does not follow the rules and regulations of devotional service, then he is again fallen. One must be very vigilant to remember that he is a part and parcel of the transcendental body of Krishna, and it is his duty as part and parcel to give service to the whole, or Krishna. If we do not render service to Krishna, then again we fall down. In other words, simply becoming initiated does not elevate one to the position of a high-class Brahmin. One has to discharge the duties and follow the relative principles very rigidly.
Liani, want to read?
Srila Goswami also says that if one is regularly discharging devotional service, there will be no question of a fall down. But even if circumstantially there is some fall down, the Vaishnava need have nothing to do with the Prayakshita. The ritualistic ceremony for purification. If someone falls down from the principles of devotional service, he need not take to the fellowship that performances for purification. He simply has to execute the rules and regulations for discharging devotional service, and this is sufficient for his reinstatement. This is the mystery of the Vaishnava devotional cult.
So, what is that saying? And if you somehow fall down, what do you have to do?
take it up again.
That's all. There's no need for performing any kind of atonement. The process itself is the atonement.
Good. Thank you.
Okay, continue.
Practically, there are three processes for elevating one to the platform of spiritual consciousness. These processes are called karma, jnana, and bhakti. Ritualistic performances are in the field of karma. Activity processes are in the field of jnana. One who has taken to bhakti, devotional service of the Lord, need have nothing to do with karma or jnana. We have already explained that pure devotional service is without any tinge of karma or jnana. Bhakti should have no tinge of philosophical speculation or ritualistic performances.
So these are lesser processes, and they all elevate one up to a certain level, but they cannot compare to devotional service. But it mentions in previous chapters, what is the relationship between karma and jnana and bhakti? What's the relationship between karma, jnana and bhakti? In the previous chapter.
I mean, if one just analyzes like the words themselves, karma, jnana, and bhakti, then there's like a certain type of activity performed based on an analogy of devotional service and Krishna.
Certain type of activity you perform.
Based on some type of karma you perform, activity you perform, based on the jnana, knowledge of bhakti to Krishna.
Yeah, so karma and jnana actually have a place within bhakti, but not independent. Karma and jnana. I think there's a little story. Karma and jnana are like two old men who are just about to die. They've been living for a long time without any life. And somehow or other, when they come in contact with bhakti, they get their life back, because they have, then their life has meaning. In and of the self, karma and jnana is just, can't do much.
Why doesn't it mention the Ashtanga system here? It only mentions karma, jnana, and bhakti. Does that have any?
Karma, it's yoga. It's yoga.
There's no real spiritual benefit to it.
Well, it's, in this age, it's just not practical. It can't be applied in this age. And that's mentioned sometimes, but this time it wasn't mentioned. That the process of Ashtanga Yoga was the means for self-realization in Satyayuga. So people could perform the process, and at the same time, you know, everything was, what would we say, conducive to performing the process. But not in this age. So it's not that Ashtanga Yoga is not a bona fide way of purification and for perfection, but it's just not in this age. And sometimes, what are some of the principles we use in this, in our bhakti, that are part of Ashtanga Yoga? What are some of the principles?
Yama, the yamas.
Yeah. What are they? Do's and don'ts, right?
Do's and don'ts.
Yeah, we, certain things we do and certain things we don't. That's yama and niyama. What's, so what else do we do?
Meditation.
Yeah. Do meditation on the holy name. Can we use pranayama?
I mean, I guess you could, not necessary.
Yeah, can we use asana?
Sure.
But in and of themselves, they're not. These can be used. The Ashtanga Yoga system is a bona fide system. It's just not mentioned in this relationship because, you know, it's a principle that doesn't apply in this age. Okay, you want to continue? You want to read too? You can read. When you get after Ileana, you can read a little bit. Would you like to read?
Sure.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
In this connection, Srila Goswami gives evidence that Srila Goswami can understand from the 21st chapter, verse 2, in which Lord Krishna says to Uddhava, the distinction between qualification and disqualification may be made in this way. Persons who are already elevated to discharging the motion of service will never again take shelter of a the fruits of activity or who are not the post-speculation. If one speaks to devotional service and is conducted by the regulative principle given by the authorities and acharyas, that is the best qualification.
Okay. One sticks to devotional service and conducts regulative principles. So, devotional service followed by regulative principles, and what's the last point? Given by
authorities.
Not just, there are different applications of the principles of devotional service according to the acharyas. One acharya may set a certain set of principles that are the basis of devotional service, and others may have different principles. Not totally different, but some might be significant. Certain elements of maybe emphasized, and certain, like just like Prabhupada talks about the importance of sadhana. But sadhana in and of itself doesn't mean you're going to become, you know, pure devotee. But Prabhupada emphasized sadhana because in this age we need sadhana because of the of Kali Yuga. We need sadhana in order to get a taste for the holy name. But the holy name is all we really need. That's the only sadhana we really need. But to come to that platform, you have to purify your consciousness through the process of sadhana. That's just an example. Okay, so not only devotional service, regulative principles, but given by Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas. Okay, would you like to read on you?
This statement is supported in the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 5th Chapter, 17th verse, where in Srimadhi, the Bhagavad Vyasa thus says, even if one does not execute the specific occupation of duty, but immediately takes direct shelter at the lowest feet of Hari, Krishna, there will be no fault on his part, and in all circumstances his possessions are secure. Even if by some bad association he falls down while executing devotional service, or if he doesn't finish the complete course of devotional service and dies untimely, still he is not heavily lost. The person who is simply discharging his occupational duty, the varna and ashram, however, with no Krishna consciousness, practically does not gain the true benefit of human life. The purport is that all conditioned souls who are engaged very frantically in activities for sense gratification, without knowing that this process will never help them to get out of impure contamination, are awarded only with repeated birth and death.
Okay. So there's no loss.
Continue.
Yeah.
In the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it is clearly stated by Vishuddhadev to his sons, persons engaged in further activities are repeatedly accepting birth and death, and until they develop a loving feeling for Vasudeva, there will be no question of getting out of these stringent laws of material nature. As such, any person who is very seriously engaged in his occupational duties in the Varnas and Ashramas, and who does not develop love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, is to be understood as simply spoiling his human forms of life. This is confirmed also in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th chapter, 32nd verse, in which the Lord says to Uddhava, my dear Uddhava, any person who takes shelter of me in complete surrender and follows my instructions, giving up all occupational duties, is to consider the first class men. In this statement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it is understood that people who are generally attracted to philanthropic, ethical, moral, altruistic, political, and social welfare activities may be considered nice men only in calculation of the material world. From Srimad Bhagavatam and other authentic Vedic scriptures, you learn further that if a person simply acts in Krishna consciousness and discharges devotional service, he is considered to be far, far better situated than all those persons engaged in philanthropic, ethical, moral, altruistic, and social welfare activities. The same thing is still more emphatically confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, 5th chapter, 37th verse, in which Karam Bhajan Muni addresses Maharaj as follows. My dear king, if somebody gives up his occupational duties as they are prescribed for the different varnas and ashrams, but takes complete shelter, surrendering himself onto the Lord's feet of the Lord, such a person is no more a debtor, nor has he any obligation to perform the different kinds of activities we render to the great sages, ancestors, living entities, and family and society members. Neither has he any need to bother executing the five kinds of yajnas for becoming free from sinful contamination. Simply by discharging devotional service, he is freed from all kinds of obligations. The purport is that as soon as a man takes his birth, he is immediately indebted to so many sources. He is indebted to the great sages because prophets, by reading their authoritative scriptures and books. For example, we take advantage of the books written by Vyasadeva. Vyasadeva has left for us all the Vedas. Before Vyasadeva's writings, the Vedic literatures were simply heard, and the disciples would learn the mantras quickly by hearing and not reading. Later, Vyasadeva that it was wise to write down the Vedas because in this age people are short memory and unable to remember all the instructions given by the spiritual master. Therefore, he left all the Vedic knowledge in the book form, such as the Puranas, Vedanta, Mahabharata, and Srimad Bhagavatam. There are many other sages. There are many other sages like Sankaracharya, Gautam Muni, Narad Muni, to whom we are indebted because we take advantage of their knowledge. Similarly, we are obliged to our forefathers because we take our birth in a particular family where we take all advantages and inherit property. Therefore, we are indebted to the forefathers and have to offer them pinyon for shalom after they are dead. Similarly, to the people in general, we are also indebted, as well as to our relatives, friends, and even animals such as cows and dogs who render us so much service. In this way, we are indebted to the demigods, to the forefathers, to the sages, to the animals, and to society in general. It is our duty to repay them for all proper discharge of service. But by one stroke of devotional service, if someone gives up all obligations and simply surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is no longer a debtor, nor obliged to any other source of benefit.
So that's a verse from the 11th canto, 5th chapter, verse 41. Who knows the verse? Anyone know? Sanskrit? What is the translation? Anybody know? Never came across that. Okay. It just mentions that no one who engages devotional service to Mukunda is no longer better to all these various categories of people within the society. And then it goes on to explain why. So why is all these debts absolved simply by devotional service?
Because the Lord takes care of that.
Yeah, but what's the relationship between these categories and the Lord?
The Lord is the root of all of the others.
Yeah. Yeah, everything is connected to the Lord. So when you serve the whole, you serve the parts too.
I don't know. Devarshi will help
you. Yeah, I got it. Now?
That's I can remember.
Devarsi putata nirnam putti nam nakinkara rayan nicha rajam sarvatmiryam saranam saramyam kato mukunda green pati vati kartum. The verse is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter in the purport of verse number 39. You'll read that. You'll find that verse mentioned there. It's in Bhagavad Gita 239. A rough translation of that verse is there. Very important verse, because we find that people who come to devotional service, they always find some reason why they can't come. It's because of connection with something. I have this obligation, I have that obligation, I have this obligation. But one who takes up devotional service seriously, then all these obligations are automatically, what we say, fulfilled with devotional service. It's not even like you're neglecting it. They're fulfilled in another way, that's all. Your parents, your friends, your relatives, your obligations automatically get satisfaction through it. And we've seen it, like a practical example, in our society. Any questions? Makes sense? Come to Krishna consciousness and you don't have to worry about anything else.
We see that in the Maharaj used to, he wanted to perform ritual, the Strada ceremony.
So did Lord Chaitanya. Lord Chaitanya did too.
Yeah, and also Lord Chaitanya. So, why the devotees can't perform this ceremony?
Here, it's mentioned. We have to forgive. I think Lord Chaitanya did that, and Yudhisthira did it to say that we should not neglect certain social rituals like that. If these social rituals can be used as an opportunity to engage others in devotional service. The story of Lord Chaitanya offered, you know, he performed the Strada ceremony. Not that he had to, but he did it as an example. I think he did it as an example is that one who is not in, those who are not engaged in devotional service must follow these rituals. He was giving the reverse example. Just like sometimes we tell people, you know, you should not give to charities, you should give to Krishna. But then they think, if you speak negatively about giving in charity, then they stop giving in charity. But then they don't give to Krishna. So we encourage people to give in charity because the giving mood is foundation for devotional service. But until they're convinced about devotional service, they should still perform their activities on whatever level they're on. One should not give up all activities and then can't make the next level. One has to perform on whatever level they're on. If you can do it, as we're reading now, you should do it, then everything is taken care of. But if you can't, then you should stay on your level and aspire for this level. Makes sense? Somebody's giving in charity and you tell them you shouldn't give in charity, give to Krishna, and they don't give either. That's not good. Okay, so we're almost done. You're sure you want to end it?
In the Bhagavad Gita also, the Lord says, give up all your occupations and just become surrendered unto me. I give you assurance that I shall give you protection from all sinful reactions. One may think that because he is surrendering unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he will not be able to perform all of his other obligations. But the Lord says repeatedly, don't hesitate. Don't consider that because you are giving up all other engagements,
there will be some flaw in your life. Don't think like that. I will give you all protection. That is the assurance of Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. There is additional evidence in the Agastya Samhita. As the relative principles of scripture are not required by a liberated person, similarly, a person who is engaged duly in the service of Lord Ramachandra is also not required to discharge the ritualistic principles which are indicated in the Vedic supplementaries. In other words, devotees of Lord Ramachandra or Krishna are already liberated persons and are not required to follow all the regulative principles mentioned in the ritualistic portions of the Vedic literature.
That's a good point. And that as a regulative, are not required by liberated persons, but as for those who are not liberated, they can't just give things up.
Mm-hmm.
A liberated person might neglect performing some rules and regulations, but it's not going to affect his devotional service. Because he's following what is that main regulative principle?
No, always remembering Krishna.
Yeah, he's always connected with Krishna. He's always remembering Krishna. What is that verse? Smartavyav satatam Vishnur Samartavyam satatam Vishnu Vishma smartam najatushit. You know? Syad vidhi nishtedashur etavar eva kinkaram. But all the rules and regulations are subordinate to these two. That is, never always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. If you can do that, you are perfect. But if you can do that, keep trying and following the regulative principles, and gradually you'll develop an attraction for Krishna, where you want to remember Krishna all the time. First you'll develop a desire to remember Krishna, then you'll start to remember Krishna all the time. But one must follow, even liberated souls follow rules and regulations. Why? Because it's an example for others. Liberated souls are trying to teach by their example, so they also follow, although they don't have to. One time Prabhupada said, you know, the boys weren't going to Mangalarti. He wasn't going either because he was translating. He said, I would love to go, but I can't. I have my translation. But the devotees should go. They have to go. Don't fall down. I'm not going to fall down if I don't go. It's like in our temples, you know. We generally say everyone should go to Mangalarti. But, you know, and that's there. But there's certain persons who don't need to go to Mangalarti. They're not going to fall down. But still they go as an example for others. Something like that. They go as an example for others, and they also go because they enjoy it. They would rather know that. But if they have some pressing service that needs to be done, they may skip in favor of that service. But there's no loss. But for a neophyte, if they start skipping the process, then after a while they become weak. So one cannot imitate. One should act on the platform that they're on. One should know what platform you're on. Whether you're on the neophyte platform, you're on the second class platform, or you're on the third class platform. You should know by your characteristics. Generally we come in as a neophyte, but then again we also develop. Okay, so let's see. You finished that last paragraph. Jerry, you want to read?
Similarly, in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, this chapter, verse 42, Kara Bhajana Muni addresses King Nini and says, "My dear King, a person who has given up the worship of the demigods and has completely concentrated his energy in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead has become very, very dear to the Lord. As such, if by chance or mistake he does something which is forbidden, there is no need for him to perform any purificatory ceremonies, because the Lord is situated within his heart, He takes the compassion for the devotee's accidental mistake and corrects him from within. It is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita in many places that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, takes a special interest in his devotees and declares emphatically that nothing can cause his devotees to fall down. He is always protecting us.
So, what is that verse in the Gita that complements this?
My devotees never perish.
That's the verse before that.
Before the.
It's in the Bhagavad Gita, 9th chapter. Yeah.
Happy
Chet Sudaracharo. What's the rest?
Bhajan Samana Nani Bhak. Bhajan Chet is personal. Sandra Eva Saman Tapia Sanya Vyabhasi Tobi Sahai.
What is it? What's the translation?
And also takes it back to devotional service.
It's because he's engaged in devotional service, he is considered to be safe and rightly situated. And then the next verse you mentioned.
What verse is that?
That's 9:30 in Bhagavad Gita. And that verse is, one who sees that person as saintly, he is also saintly. So not only is that person saintly, the one who sees him from that side, he also understands. He also is considered to be saintly. And Krishna will pick him up again as long as he just engages in the process. We say like it's third class to for a fall down, it's first class to get back up. And Krishna sees that one is sincere, he picks them up. One is trying to again. Prabhupada used to say, don't be surprised who stays. I mean, don't be surprised who leaves, be surprised who stays. It's like a razor's edge. A little slip and you're out. It's easy to slip. Okay. Any questions on that reading, fifth chapter, Purity of Devotional Service? There's no questions. I'll give you the test questions for. So the next class is on Thursday at 4:00. Okay. Ileana, you learning something? That's okay. You're doing good. Just as long as you keep attending the class and try and do the readings, do your best. This is a very deep science. It's not something simple as people think it is. If I look at it from an external view, it looks quite simple. But it's very deep and it's very technical, very philosophical, and it's also perfect. But it's interesting. It's the science of awakening our, we say, our eternal love for Krishna. Not based on sentiment, but based on, actual, what we say, realized experience, knowledge. Okay.
These questions for chapter 5 are going to be for chapter 6.
These will be questions for chapter 5, which we just read. We do that, right? We take the questions for chapter. We read the chapter, and we take the questions for that chapter for the next time.
Not usually. Not so far.
What do we do?
Usually you give the questions for the chapter after. Or before, and then we read the chapter and get the answers, and then we go over it in class.
What happens
a lot of times is because the chapters are usually long, we don't get finished reading them here. So we only start reading them and you go to this question for those that chapter.
Yeah.
And since we haven't finished the reading.
Because today we finished them.
Right.
Oh, okay. That's all right, we'll continue with this. All right, so there's questions for chapter 5, the purity of devotional service. Ready? Only one person has to write. Jeremy usually writes and then he just sends it out to everyone. Explain how every living being has the right to perform devotional service and on this basis how the Krishna conscious movement is making this policy a practice worldwide. Spanish invasion. Mexico. Mexico. Where are you from? Which place?
Mexico.
Mexico.
Hidalgo, Mexico.
Hidalgo.
Hidalgo.
Where is that? North, south?
1 hour and a half of here, Mexico City. Mexico City.
Going which way?
In the direction. North.
North. Northeast?
North.
I went to Mexico City 2 years ago, and then I went someplace northeast. It's a very nice place. He did Rati Yatra. May 2004.
Mm-hmm. Oh, they said now in 1 month there will be a lot of yatra in Guadalajara.
No, Mexico City. Yeah, every May, Mexico City, Guadalajara, November, right?
Yeah.
See, I know more than you do.
Oh, wow.
Not that new. I've been to Mexico City, Lafayette, and so on. But the big one is Guadalajara. Question 2. Initiation by a bona fide spiritual master and one's endeavor to perform devotional service properly. Which of these two is most important? Question. Okay. Number 3. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Explain the mystery of the devotional cult. Explain the mystery of the devotional cult. Or briefly explain the three processes for elevation. To the platform of spiritual consciousness. Briefly explain the three processes for elevation to the platform of spiritual consciousness. And explain how devotional service is the topmost. Is that word topmost? Is that a bona fide English word?
I think the computer, Microsoft Word recognizes it.
I do.
Yeah.
That was one of the Prabhupada reinvented the English language.
It doesn't recognize fall down or fruitive. I don't know.
Fruitive and fall down. How about what else? About that English. On my list. Briefly, okay, we got that one. Question 5. What are the
different obligations of a conditioned soul. Question, and then the second part of that question. How does devotional service free one from these obligations? And that's the five questions.
Repeat to us.
Yeah, how does devotional service free one from these obligations? Okay, some verses. Srimad Bhagavatam 1121 verse 1 and 2. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, fifth chapter, 17th verse, 1517. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:11:32. There we go. Srimad Bhagavatam 11:5:41, which we just measured. 11:5:42. And Bhagavad Gita 18:66. These are some verses connected with these the topics of that chapter. Okay, that's interesting. Yes, yeah. You're learning something. See, see is very good because see means I see and also means yes. When you say yes, the best way to say yes is I see. Okay, so
that's it for today. Anything else? Last 20 questions.